Today we're reading from the second canto, chapter 7, text 26, Hare Krishna. So this verse, I think we can use the Brahma Samhita meter. It's quite a long one. So let's try our level best. So we can say word to word first and then we can recite the verse. So this is a Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto from the cosmic manifestation. The chapter is entitled as Scheduled Incarnations with Specific Function. Very interesting. We actually randomly selected some of these verses just to facilitate for the upcoming festival, Janmashtami festival. Mm-hmm. We thought, you know, we can build up toward Janmashtami by discussing about the different pastimes, especially prior to the arrival or the appearance of Krishna. So I thought this verse is appropriate, a verse which is spoken by Lord Brahma, a good verse to for us to focus our attention on in preparation for Janmashtami. When the world is overburdened by the fighting strength of kings who have no faith in God, the Lord, just to diminish the distress of the world, descends with his plenary portion. The Lord comes in his original form with beautiful black hair, and just to expand his transcendental glories, he acts extraordinarily. No one can properly estimate how great he is. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This verse is specially describing the appearance of Lord Krishna and his immediate expansion, Lord Baladev. Both Lord Krishna and Lord Baladev are one supreme personality of Godhead. The Lord is omnipotent, and he expands himself in innumerable forms and energies, and the whole unit is known as the one supreme Brahman. Such extensions of the Lord are divided into two divisions, namely personal and differential. The personal expansions are called the Vishnu Tattvas, and the differential expansions are called the Jiva Tattvas. And in such expansional activity, Lord Baladev is the first personal expansion of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vishnu Puran, as well as in the Mahabharat, both Krishna and Baladev are mentioned as having beautiful black hair, even in their advanced age. The Lord is called Anu Palaksha Margaha, or in still more technical Vedic terms, Avan Manasa Gocharaha, one who is never to be seen or realized by the limited sense perception of the people in general. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.25, it is said by the Lord, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavrataha. In other words, he reserves the right of not being exposed to anyone and everyone. Only the bona fide devotees can know him by his specific symptoms. And out of many, many such symptoms, one symptom is mentioned herein in this verse, that the Lord is Sita Krishna Klesha, or one who is observed always with beautiful black hair. Both Lord Krishna and Lord Baladev have such hair on their heads. And thus, even in advanced age, they appeared like young boys, 16 years old. That is a particular symptom of the personality of Godhead. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that although he is the oldest personality among all living entities, he always looks like a new, youthful body, boy. That is the characteristics of the spiritual body. The material body is symptomized by birth, death, old age, and disease. But the spiritual body is conspicuous by the absence of those material symptoms. Living entities who reside in the Vaikuntha Lokas, an eternal life and bliss, have the same type of spiritual body, without being affected by any signs of old age. It is described in the Bhagavatam, Canto 6, that the party of Vishnudutas who came to deliver Ajamil from the clutches of the party of Yamaraj appeared like youthful boys, corroborating the description in this verse. It is ascertained that the spiritual bodies in the Vaikuntha Lokas, either of the Lord or of the other inhabitants, are completely distinct from the material bodies of this world. Therefore, When the Lord descends from that world to this world, he descends in his spiritual body of Atmamaya, or internal potency, without any touch of the Bahirangamaya, or the external material energy. The allegation that the impersonal Brahman appears in this material world by accepting material body is quite absurd. Therefore, the Lord, when he comes here, has not got a material body, but a spiritual body. The impersonal Brahmajyoti is only the glaring effulgence of the body of the Lord. And there is no difference in quality between the body of the Lord and the impersonal ray of the Lord, called the Brahmajyoti. Now the question is, why the Lord, who is omnipotent, comes here to diminish the burden created upon the world by the unscrupulous kingly order? Certainly the Lord does not need to come here personally for such purpose, but he actually descends to exhibit his transcendental activities in order to encourage his pure devotee, who want to enjoy life by chanting the glories of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 9:13-14, it is stated that the Mahatmas, great devotees of the Lord, take pleasure in chanting the activities of the Lord. All Vedic literatures are meant for turning one's attention towards the Lord and his transcendental activities. Thus, the activities of the Lord in his dealings with worldly people create a subject matter for discussion by his pure devotees. Srila Prabhupada ki. What a wonderful purport. Om Ajnana Timurandasakana Jana Shalaka Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gravi Namaha. This verse is specifically selected, actually, like I was saying earlier on, to kind of prepare our mind for this wonderful occasion that's coming up, Sri Krishna Janmashtami. So the majority of the classes that are being given this week are building towards that. So I chose this specific verse because this chapter is dealing about the cosmic manifestation. The whole canto is talking about the cosmic manifestation. But this specific chapter is of interest to us because it's talking about the scheduled incarnations of the Lord with specific functions. Lord Brahma is describing that. So in the beginning of the chapter, Narada Muni engaged himself with Lord Brahma, because Narada Muni was very curious. And he knows that Lord Brahma is the ocean of knowledge when it comes to the Vedas. Nobody knows any better than Lord Brahma, his father, Lord Brahma. So he approached, Narada Muni approached Lord Brahma. He was asking him what are the symptoms of, you know, the process of creation, the whole cosmic world, how is it created? What is the background? What is the reason why it is created? You know, Narada is asking Lord Brahma. And how is it conserved? You know, once it's created, you know, who maintains this? Because maintaining the universe is also a very big challenge. So Narada Muni was very curious. He was asking all those questions. And under whose control is it running? Who's controlling the whole thing? Are you controlling it, Lord Brahma? Or is there anybody else that we need to know? He was throwing all these questions. And also the source of your knowledge. He can see that Lord Brahma is full of knowledge. He has so much knowledge about the Vedas. And he wants to know where have you got it from? Where did it come? Who is the source of your knowledge? I want to know. And who is also protecting you? Ultimately, you protect everyone. But who is your protector? You know, tell me who the protector is. And also, in whose direction are you creating this universe? You know, you've created this gigantic cosmic world. But who's giving you that direction? And he was very curious. And eventually, he pleased Lord Brahma, because Lord Brahma also wants to get the opportunity to disseminate this knowledge. He doesn't want to acquire the knowledge from Sri Krishna and keep it for himself. One of the roles Lord Brahma plays in the universe is actually to disseminate this knowledge. Adi Kavaye, he is our Adi Guru. Even in our Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya, the original spiritual master, that's why it's called Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya. It actually starts from him. He has so much knowledge. So Brahma was very pleased. He was very pleased, and he began to describe the activities of the Lord and the reason why he created the universe, how he sustains it. And in this specific chapter, he's actually going through the incarnations, the various incarnations of the Lord. Because let's talk about Lord Brahma. He is obviously the chief of all the demigods. Among all the demigods, maybe you may have something in the region of 33 million demigods in the universe. He is the chief. He is the ultimate. He's also the very, very, very first created being. You know, he doesn't have the so-called mother and father like we all see in the material world. He appeared and he was born. He appeared from Lord Vishnu. He is the very first created being. He is also, like I was saying, the original spiritual master. Among all the spiritual masters throughout the universe, the original spiritual master is Lord Brahma. He is also a personality who has an in-depth realization about the supremacy of Krishna. Nobody knows better, more than Brahma, how great, how supreme Sri Krishna is. You know, we all know Brahma Samhita, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. You can tell that is a reflection of his mind, how much he is respectful and how much realization he has about the supremacy of Sri Krishna. So Sri Krishna empowered him. Obviously, it is said that he has the sum total of all the Vedic knowledge in depth. I mean, he is a personality who lives in our human calculation, something in the region of 311 trillion years in a human calculation. A very, very, very long time for us. So he is the personality who has seen all the incarnations of Sri Krishna from beginning to end. You know, he's probably half of his age at the moment, around 50, 51 or so, according to the Vedic descriptions. So he has seen from the beginning of creation every single incarnation of Sri Krishna. Can you imagine that? We're talking about innumerable, because Krishna's pastime is happening in the universe all the time, one after another. He's seen them all. He has the ability to remember. He has the ability to teach someone like Narada Muni and the entire universe about the glories of Sri Krishna. So this translation is wonderful. Just to repeat again, when the world is overburdened by the fighting strength of kings who have no faith in God, the Lord, just to diminish the distress of the world, descends with his plenary portion. The Lord comes in his original form with beautiful black hair, and just to expand his transcendental glories, he acts extraordinarily. No one can properly estimate how great he is. A wonderful verse. So here Lord Brahma is mentioning four key points. One of the key points he mentioned is about how the world is overburdened by faithless demoniac kings posing to be a proper kshatriyas or kings or royal families, but they're faithless, they're demoniac, misguiding the society. Sometimes the world gets overburdened by such personalities. He also mentioned that it descends with a plenary portion. We all know before Krishna appeared, the plenary portion of Krishna, the first expansion of Krishna, Sri Baladev, appeared, and then Krishna appeared afterwards. And then eventually he descends in the original form, in the same original form that he has in Goloka Vrindavan. He descends with that form. And Brahma mentioned that, you know, one of the prime purposes is to expand the extraordinary glories and to please his devotees and also to eliminate this demoniac forces. In this specific chapter, actually, although, like I was saying, there are innumerable incarnations of the Lord from the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma is only touching the principal incarnations in this specific chapter. And in this specific verse, he is talking about the principal incarnations in the sense that the most important one, the original personality, Sri Krishna, and also Balaram, Baladev, who is supposed to be the first incarnation. Because Brahma has the ability, he has four heads, he has the ability to see in all directions throughout the universe. Yeah? He can see what Sri Krishna is doing in every single universe. And of course, Krishna's pastime is happening virtually eternally. Krishna is always with us within the material world. Not that he appears only in one day of Brahma, maybe in our universe, yes, but he is appearing all the time throughout the universe for the benefit of his devotees and to protect the Vaishnavas. So, how did Lord Brahma get this deeper realization about the supremacy of Sri Krishna. It is said that in the scriptures, one need to have unalloyed devotion, pure loving devotion for Krishna, to be able to understand the personality of Krishna. Otherwise, it's very difficult. Krishna reserves the right to hide himself from anyone. He doesn't have to reveal his supremacy to anyone and everyone. He reserves the right. But he gives the opportunity to those whose eyes are anointed through love. I mean, Lord Brahma mentioned that in Brahma Samhita, right? Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva hrdeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram achintya gunasvarupam govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. He is saying, I worship the primeval Lord, Govinda, who is always seen by his devotees, whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of Shyamasundara, situated within the heart of his devotees. So one need to develop that pure love. Our eyes need to be filled, anointed with the pulp of love, and to be able to appreciate Krishna and in his form as Shyamasundara. Now, was mentioned by Lord Brahma, but Krishna actually echoes the same message in Bhagavad Gita as well, in chapter 7, the knowledge of the Absolute. A wonderful verse, Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrataha mudoyam nabijanati lokamam ajam avyam. A wonderful verse in Bhagavad Gita. Shri Krishna is saying, I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by the eternal creative potency. And so the deluded world knows me not, who am unborn and infallible. Very strong message. Krishna is saying, I'm never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. Sometimes you wonder, you know, materialistic people, if they have envy towards Krishna, yeah. A lot of atheist people, they develop some kind of envy towards God. Because of that, they are pretty convinced. Even in the scientific terms or whatever, they can explain how God doesn't exist confidently. And they actually believe in it, yeah? Because that's what they want. Krishna makes them so. They are unintelligent, yeah? Krishna can only reveal himself to us if we approach him through love, through devotional service. Then we will realize his supremacy. So Lord Brahma is one of the emblem, one of the exemplary personality in the universe who have that love for Krishna. Govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. He is worshipping Krishna and nobody else. Because of that, Krishna has revealed all these wonderful realizations about his identity. So the first point that was mentioned, world overburdened by the faithless. Let's talk about the faithless. Who are the demons? Asura, obviously in connection with Krishna's appearance. We're thinking of Kamsa. One of the main reasons why he came is to annihilate demoniac personalities like Kamsa. So the world is full of faithless and faithful. Either we're faithless or we're faithful towards Krishna. So the faithless people are envious towards God, and the faithful people are obedient towards God, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the entire universe is filled with this kind of personalities. So sometimes there is imbalance. We have more faithless and we have less obedient people towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But here, when we talk about the world is overburdened by the faithless, we're talking about faithless personalities or asuras of the highest kind. I mean, we're not talking about the kind of faithless people we have here in the world. We're talking about a personality like Kamsa, who are extremely powerful. Very, very powerful, so much so, they have even the strength to threaten the devatas. Some of the personalities like Ravana, Kamsa, they're very powerful. And they're very learned as well in the Vedas. But the thing is, they abuse the Vedas. The Vedas gives you knowledge. It depends how you want to make use of it. You can go to the shop and you can buy a knife. You can chop carrots and tomatoes in the kitchen with the same knife. But the same knife, you can use it to stab someone. So it really depends what you use it for at the end of the day. So the Vedas can empower you, can give you all kind of mystic power. But those things are done for a good purpose. But unfortunately, there are personalities, faithless personalities, who abuse that power and that knowledge. And the demons are one of them. But in general, although that we have these envious personalities and faithless and asuras in the world, Krishna still treats everyone equally. Equally in the sense that at the end of the day, everybody is the children of God, whether we are a demon or a not demon. Krishna has a way of lifting them up eventually. We all know that when the demons are killed by Sri Krishna, they even get liberation. They may not get the best type of liberation, maybe they might end up in Brahmajyoti or whatever, but still they can be delivered from that kind of asuric tendencies. So in general, this Lord has no hatred towards anyone, whether they are demons or devotees. He is equal to all, but he is inclined to those who approach him with devotion. So this is actually very nicely mentioned Bhagavad Gita, Most Confidential Knowledge, Chapter 9. Shamoham sava bhuteshu na medveshu stina priyaha ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. Krishna is saying, I envy nobody, nor I am partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend. And I am also a friend to him. Although, you know, he is not partial to anyone, still he has the ability to be a little bit more inclined to those who render service to him with devotion. Asuras are not just also envious towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Asuras are also envious of devotees. Now you can see in the pastime of Jaya Shishirada Goklana Laki Jaya. In the pastime of Lord Ramachandra and also Krishna, you can see that most of these demoniac personalities, they have caused so much suffering for the Vaishnavas, for the devatas. So the envy goes beyond the Supreme Personality of Godhead for asuras. They also envy the demigods. In fact, they are considered to be the enemies of the demigods. They envy their position because asuras know that the demigods are favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they want to have the same power as those devatas. So much so, there are instances, there have been demons or asuras who built their mystic power so much that they even invade the Swargalok. There were times when some of the big demons, they invaded the Swargalok to take over the kingdom. They go to that extent because of that envious mentality. How do they get this power? Because this power is attained, in the scripture to say that, through very severe penance and austerities. So this gives us an indication, the type of austerity that we do, how much strength that gives us. Even in devotional service, you know, austerity means a voluntary inconvenience for the sake of attaining something higher spiritually. So the asuras abuse that, obviously. They go through a very severe austerities and penances to be able to get so much power. You can see the penance Hiranyakashipu went through, standing with his arms raised for thousands and thousands of years, you know, waiting for Lord Brahma to give him that benediction. Very difficult. I've tried it in school when I was punished by the teacher. I told him, okay, raise your hand. I can't even lift it for 2 minutes. Very difficult to do that. Lord Hiranyakashipu has done that for thousands of years. And very severe. So they go through a lot of inconvenience, penance, and austerities to be able to attain this power. Because the Vedas say so. In Manusmriti, I picked up one verse that mentioned, whatever is hard to be traversed, if you think it's hard to traverse anywhere in the world, let alone the universe, through austerity it's possible. You do austerity, you will be able to traverse not just in this world, anywhere in the universe. Whatever is hard to be attained, you can attain. You want to attain something, the most difficult thing to attain, through austerity you can attain it. Whatever is hard to be reached, whatever is hard to be performed, all this may be accomplished by austerities. For austerities possess a power which is difficult to surpass. So it indicates that how performing all kind of austerity, we can take this as an advantage for us, even within devotional service. Even things like Ekadashi, sometimes we take up a challenge. I want to make sure that I fast. I want to make sure that I increase my numbers of rounds or whatever. I know it's inconvenience materially for the physical body. But yeah, it is difficult to obtain, but if we actually convince ourselves we will do it, and if we do it, we actually obtain so much strength afterwards, mentally and physically and spiritually. So this kind of spiritual austerities are encouraged. So what happens? So when we have an increased number of this kind of asuric population, where we're talking about the powerful ones, then the devotees become unhappy, the devatas become unhappy, and then they communicate with the Lord, and the Lord happily descends to protect devotees and the devatas. So that's one of the reasons why Krishna appears. So most of these demonic personalities, they also, they've got to worship someone to be able to get those, and they can't get it from Krishna. So they worship Kali. Kali Ma, she is a superintendent in this material world, the most powerful demigod. And they worship Kali, and they please Kali somehow, and they get a lot of strength from her. But at times, at the end of the day, Kali is also a devotee of Krishna. When they are extremely infuriating, she actually destroys them. She's very powerful and she gets very angry. When the limit is up, she actually destroys them as well. And that way she assists Krishna and the devatas by performing her duty in that manner. So we talked about Kamsa. Kamsa is one of the reason why Sri Krishna came, one of the main asura at that time. He is a son of Ugrasena. Among all the Bhuja dynasty, he is considered to be the most asuric. Since Treta Yuga, since Lord Ram time, Treta Yuga, we had numerous dynasties in the world, like the Yadu dynasty and Bhuja dynasty. So what happens is, Krishna appeared, and when he was engaged with Kamsa, especially for fighting, what happened is that most of the people around did not recognize Krishna in the right way. There were very limited people who knew Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For instance, for Kamsa, he was nothing but death personified. This is a person who comes to kill me. You know, he wasn't calculating, no, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to whom I should surrender. He didn't have that mentality. So every single person in that arena had a different view about who Krishna is. Some of the wrestlers, they saw him, whoa, if he's coming to wrestle with Kanura and Mushtika, he must be the best wrestler. Krishna and Balaram must be a really best wrestler. So the wrestlers saw him as a wrestler, not as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And sometimes you have also people like the ordinary people. They seem as ordinary person. Well, he was given the chance to come and fight with Kanura and Mushtika. But then for personalities like Nanda Maharaj, he was just a mere child. He is a young boy. Why are they allowing him to fight with this powerful wrestlers? Again, they are also in so much fear that Krishna and Balaram, the young boys, are subjected to fight with this powerful wrestlers. So their covering is obviously different. There's a yoga maya and maya maya. Krishna allows them to be covered in such a way that they see him as ordinary child. So Vasudev, I mean, it's nice. One of the reasons why I wanted to mention about some of these personalities, it gives us a very good preparation, you know, before Krishna's appearance discourse come up by His Holiness. Who's coming for Janmashtami? Lokanath Swami. Lokanath Swami is coming. So he will be describing the specific appearance of Lord Krishna. So I wanted to teach some of the background information around it just to enrich ourselves. And that's one of the reasons why I'm mentioning about Vasudev, Devaki, Nanda Maharaj, and also Rohini Devi. So it's nice to know a little bit of background about them. So Vasudev is obviously, he's one of the Yadu prince. He is a father of Sri Krishna. He is also the sibling of Krishna's siblings, Balaram and Subhadra, were also under his care, Vasudev. He was the son of the king, Surasena, the Yadav king. He is also a sister of Kunti Devi, the famous Kunti Devi, who was married to King Pandu. So he wanted to pacify Kamsa when Kamsa was just about to kill Devaki. So we must understand Vasudeva is known as Mahabhaga. Mahabhaga means he's very righteous, he's very balanced, and he's very realized. A great personality. Very great personality, unagitated and very sober, dhira. You know, he's a very sober person. So when Kamsa was infuriated to hear about what he heard, that the eighth child of his own sister will be killing him, he immediately wanted to take action by killing Devaki on the spot. And you all know the story how Vasudeva was challenging him. So first, through the strength of his devotion, he wanted to challenge him mentally, to bring him down, to calm him down, to make him understand. So wonderful points mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. How Vasudeva was expressing from philosophical point of view how important it is for him to consider various elements before he takes that kind of evil, dreadful action. He is telling him that one should not fear about death, but one should be prepared for death. When you know that you are dying, your role is not to be fearful and to become more sinful. Yeah? Like Parikshit Maharaj, when he know that he is about to die, what did he do? He relinquished all his activities, role activities. He completely focused for 7 days, non-stop, in understanding and meditating on Sri Krishna. So it is said that one should be prepared the moment he knows that he will be dying, rather than implicating ourselves in further sinful activities. But obviously, Kamsa didn't want to know. He wasn't convinced with that. So naturally, Vasudeva was very philosophical, and he tried to explain to him about the nature of the soul, that the soul is permanent, not dying. In fact, some of the conclusions of the Bhagavad Gita were mentioned to Kamsa before even Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Sri Krishna. Just like one of the verses in Bhagavad Gita we have is just tasya hi duvo mityu duvam janma mutasya cha tasmad aparate irte natvam sochitu marhasi. Sri Krishna is saying, for one who has taken his birth, death is certain. And for one who is dead, birth is certain. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. Some of these concepts were actually relayed by Vasudeva to Kamsa. But unfortunately, Kamsa were not able to hear any of these philosophical descriptions. And he still wanted to proceed to kill Devaki. So the material life is obviously filled with lust and greed. Personalities like Kamsa are full of them, lust and greed. He has so much greed. He wanted to sustain his power. He didn't want anyone to challenge him. So that lust and greed was overpowering him, and he was not able to hear, to listen. The conclusive statements are coming out of Vasudeva. So actually, our Krishna consciousness movement is specifically preparing every one of us to come out of this lust and greed in the material world, to make us surrendered to Sri Krishna. Because without that, obviously, the repetition of birth and death will continue perpetually. So Krishna is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 9:34, man mana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji mam namaskuru. He's saying one should always be absorbed in thought of Krishna. One should become his devotee. One should always engage in his service and worship him as a supreme great. And one should always offer him obeisances. So these statements are very important for us to get out of that repeated cycle of life and death. But unfortunately, Kamsa was not able to listen to that, and he still proceeded to kill Devaki. The only way he could check him, he realized that he's a demon, he's not able to listen to me. And then he changed his mind. He said, okay, you're determined to kill her, but let me promise you something. I know you trust me. You're afraid of the eighth child, but why would you want to kill her? Let her have the children. But I promise you that every single newborn that's born from Devaki will be handed to you by me personally on the spot. That was the only reason he agreed. He agreed not to kill Devaki. And because of that, they were spared and they were released. Actually, they were not imprisoned immediately until Kamsa had a discussion with Narada Muni And again, he was in fear. No, I'm not going to let them loose. So I better lock them up. And he put both Devaki and Vasudeva in prison. So what about wonderful Devaki? Let's talk a little bit about Devaki Devi. Devaki is a daughter of Devak. She is a sister of Kamsa, obviously. She's also a wife of Vasudev and a mother of Krishna. Actually, in India, in Goa, there is a dedicated temple. It's called the Devaki Krishna Temple, where Devaki Devi is worshipped alongside Krishna, which is sweet. Sometimes you find such kind of temples in India. So this temple is situated in Goa somewhere. So Devaki Devi is known as Mahabhagu. Because for various reasons, even Kamsa acknowledged eventually how great Devaki Devi is. The only way he acknowledges when he realized Yoga Maya, how Maya, Yoga Maya had appeared. And as the seventh or the eighth child, I mean, as far as his calculation is concerned, she was born of Devaki. Because of that, immediately his respect to Devaki increased. Because Yoga Maya is worshipped, or Mahamaya, or Durga is worshipped by Kamsa. She is considered to be his supreme worshipable object. If that worshipable object is born of Devaki, that makes Devaki great. So he addressed us as Mahabhaga. He realized that you're a great personality if you manage to have Yoga Maya as your daughter. So Devaki also addresses Krishna often as Madhusudan. The reason why she does that is that she was quite confident, Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he had killed King demon Madhu. Madhu is considered to be one of the most powerful demons in those days. And Krishna has also killed numerous demons in the past. So she is quite confident that Krishna would also kill Kamsa. In that sense, she had that solace. She was comfortable. But at the same time, because of the Yoga Maya covering, Devaki still thinks he is a little boy. And when he changed his forearmed form to a child, to a baby form, she started begging Krishna, please, Kamsa will wake up anytime, please disappear, go with Vasudev. So she had that loving and caring nature for Krishna. Although she knew that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still that attachment was there, and she sees Krishna in a devotional sense. So Vasudeva and Devaki, it is said that they could not enjoy the relationship they have with Krishna as much as Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. Although Krishna was born of Devaki and Vasudev, what happened from the very young age, from the time he was born, Vasudeva had taken by Krishna's arrangement to Yashoda Mai. So that takes us to Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, how exalted they are. Yashoda Maya and Nanda Maharaj, for them to have Krishna from a young days, to enjoy that pastime, every single pastime that happened in Gokul and Vrindavan, that intimacy were there was Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and the gopis and the gopas. So that actually makes us realize how fortunate someone like Yashoda Maya is, how great she is. And it is said that even more than Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Maya's role and position is even superior. How is it superior? Nanda Maharaj, being the king, being the powerful representative of the community there in Gokul, often he goes out, he doesn't actually have that time or opportunity to spend that quality time with baby Krishna. Yashoda had every single day, playing with him, bathing, chastising him. So she had that very intimate relationship. So sometimes Krishna gives or reserves that opportunity to specific devotees, depending on their background. Obviously, Yashoda Maya had come from the spiritual world. She's a great personality. She's actually the supermost personality who displays the parental love for Sri Krishna. Nobody has shown the highest form of parental love for Lord Krishna as much as Yashoda Maya. Even Kunti Devi has accepted that. During Krishna Leela, there are personalities who knew Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then, because of Yoga Maya, they get covered and they carry on with their life. One personality is Arjuna. Can you imagine? The whole Bhagavad Gita was disclosed to Arjuna. Arjuna had told about the supremacy of Krishna. He knew
Throughout Bhagavad Gita, there's so much description. But that kind of description was not there for Yashoda Mai. Krishna chose to cover her with Yoga Maya so that she can enjoy that rasa with him, with Krishna. Yashoda Mai has seen so many activities by Krishna that are superhuman. It's easy for anyone to understand this personality is not ordinary. I mean, lifting Govardhan Hill, expanding himself 16,000 times in Dwarka and living for 100 years or whatever. Superhuman, nobody can do that. They see these things. But someone like Yashoda still thinks, oh, he's just a mystic. He's a mystic person. She doesn't see him as a Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why? Because Krishna wants her to enjoy that rasa with him as a parent, as a mother. It spoils us, isn't it? You're a mother, but then you know your son is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. Will you be inclined to feed him? Because you know he's not going to get hungry anyway. Yeah? But if you are covered to think that he's just an ordinary child, actually both that Yoga Maya covering is there both for the devotees and for Krishna as well. Krishna allows himself to be covered by the same Yoga Maya. When he's in fear of Yashoda running away from her, he is not actually pretending to be in fear. He covers himself in such a way that he's actually in anxiety. He's crying, his tears, it's genuine. When Yashoda sees Krishna crying, she genuinely sees he's totally terrified. Krishna feels it that way too, because he allowed that relationship to continue with Yashoda Mai. So it's a very, very sweet relationship. Even Vasudev, one of his greatnesses that Vasudev promised Kamsa, right? Like we mentioned earlier on, that I will deliver every single newborn to you. He is a righteous, he is a great devotee. But why did he break the promise? He broke the promise, didn't he? When Krishna was born, did he hand Krishna to Kamsa? No, he didn't. He took, early morning, he took Krishna to Yashoda Mai. That means he broke the promise. So sometimes devotees may go even to this extent of risking their so-called moralistic behavior for their devotion to Krishna, to please Krishna, because ultimately pleasing Krishna is more important than pleasing the so-called moral duties that we have, social or nation or whatever in the world. So that also shows his greatness. But at the same time, when Vasudeva was crossing to go to Gokul, Krishna also wanted to test Vasudeva how sincere he is. And he slipped and he fell in Jamuna. I don't know if you know the story. Krishna actually fell once into Jamuna. Vasudeva was panicking. He really panicked. Oh my God, the baby has fallen. He panicked and lifted him. He brought him up. And Krishna was enjoying that relationship. So in that way, I mean, these personalities are so wonderful. I know there's so much to talk about these wonderful personalities, but I'm very much conscious of the time. It's nearly 20 to 9. Unless there is any comment or one or two questions, I want to unwind. I don't want to go over the limit. Hare Krishna.